This is Judy Lee, and it's the 21st of March 2018, and I'm here with Gloria Rouse in her own home. And Gloria's had a long history of working with Bealey Abbey. So, Gloria, would you like to tell us how you started?
Well, I started at Bealey Abbey in 1978, and all I knew at the time was that it had been bought by William Foyle, the co-founder of Foyle's Bookshop in London. And he died in 1963, and his daughter, Christina Foyle, took over. She employed me to be a researcher of books requested by customers both at home and abroad at the Charing Cross Road shop. But I later became her PA during the mid-80s. From day one, I was at home in the Abbey. We had Christina, of course, her husband, Ronald Batty, and the housekeeper, Mrs. Jakes. Mrs. Jakes was then in her late 70s, but quite frankly, she was the boss. Miss Foyle once told me she was her only real friend because she told her the truth always. It was always on Mrs. Jake's say-so which domestic staff stayed and which went. Miss Foyle had the reputation of being a hard employer, but Mrs. Jakes was the boss. It was a very eccentric environment. On my working days, I would wake up and think, well, I wonder what will happen today. And something always did. The Abbey was run by a minimum of staff, all part-timers. There were a large number of animals, a dog, many cats, five tortoises who lived in the chapter house, which also happened to be my office, geese, chickens, peacocks, doves, etc. And Mrs. Jakes also fed a fox every day. The Abbey became shabby because the old people had lost interest and did the bare minimum of repair work. The garden was neglected because there were not enough people to tend it. Some of the eccentricities. They decided, Mr. Batty and Miss Foyle decided they needed a new country car. So they took themselves to Fred Perry's in Southend, and the salesman looked at this elderly couple. She had a pair of dirty sandals on. He had cobwebs on his shoes. And they said they rather liked the look of that Granada. And he said, would you like to test drive it? No, won't be necessary. We'll have it. So they sat down at a desk with the gentleman, and he got out forms, asked them name and everything. Miss Foyle said, what's this for? So he said, the HP forms. HP forms? Hire purchase. Hire purchase? You bring the car to my home and I will give you a cheque. I'm not buying hire purchase. Well, this story was told to Mrs. Jakes the next day when they arrived. He said, I've brought my colleague along because I really didn't know what I was going to meet. He said, so we thought we better go and make sure that this is genuine. Quite frankly, we thought it was two on a walk. But, of course, that was how it was. And then another time I went down, I used to go sometimes on a Friday, sometimes on a Sunday. And it was a beautiful, beautiful day in the sun, in the spring, not summer, spring. And I got in there. She said, "They're in the garden." Mrs. Jake said, "They're in the garden." I said, "All right." "I want you to go out there and do the letters." "Okay." So I got my book and out I went. Couldn't see them anywhere. I thought, "Well, I don't know." So I'm wandering around and all of a sudden, "Mrs. Rouse, we are here," from behind a hedge. And when I got behind the hedge, there they were on their sunbeds. And Miss Foyle just had a skirt and a bra on. I said, "Oh." She said, "Mrs. Jakes wouldn't let me wear my sundress. There's more than one way to skin a cat." And that was life, you know. There's another time I went in and she said, "You'll never guess what happened to me at the shop on Monday." I said, "What?" She said, "Well, the lift's broken at the shop and they're repairing it. And they'd curtained off a piece of the shop for me to do my interviews." She used to interview every Monday for staff. And she said, a chap poked his head round the curtain. She said, I said, "Do come in, take a seat." And she said, I was asking question after question. "Do you speak any languages?" And he said, "Yeah, well, I'll speak a bit of French and German." "Oh, very good, very good." And then the man said, "Excuse me, what am I doing here?" And she said, "Haven't you come for a job?" He said, "No, I've come to buy some books for my kids." So, you know, and I used to come home and say to the kids, "Oh, well, you'll never guess. And you'll never guess who I've been writing to today." And I used to rip off all these famous names who were being invited to the Foyle's luncheons.
Can you tell us more about the luncheons?
The luncheons, yes. They were held for 10 months every year, not January and not August. And everybody who was anybody had been to the luncheons. And I used to get the job of writing the invitations. So I'd write to, you know, I mean, the Beatles attended, everybody. It was Max Bygraves and Tommy Cooper and politicians. It was Geoffrey Archer. He was quite often the chairman, Geoffrey Archer. And always I thought he was the best because he always did his homework. Ned Sherrin was often chairman. Barbara Cartland was a great friend of Miss Foyle's. She had luncheons in her honour and she chaired a lot as well. And they were really glittery because it was either the Grosvenor House or the Dorchester. So, depending how large they were, the Margaret Thatcher ones, for instance, you'd have to have the ballroom because it was so huge. And I went to both of hers. In the end, I was going to every luncheon. And also, because Miss Foyle was basically very kind, especially to me, she heard that my sister had got an invalid husband, and she started inviting my sister to the luncheons. And Pat went to every luncheon too, which I thought was exceptional, really. The stories about Christina Foyle. She was a bit of a tartar at the shop, I know that. She was. But at Bealey Abbey, she was at home and she had a terrific sense of humour. her eyes used to twinkle when you knew when she was kidding, because her eyes used to twinkle. But she loved a joke. If I went and said, oh, I've got a joke, oh, good. Yeah. You know, she was a different person at Bealey Abbey to what she was at Charing Cross Road. Yeah. And she used to do half a week at the shop and half a week at the Abbey.
So what years are we talking about with Christina?
Christina was, well, it was 78 to 1999. That's when she died. And that's when Christopher Foyle, her nephew, bought the estate. Miss Foyle didn't leave any money to her family. So Mr. and Mrs. Foyle, who own the place now, had to buy it from the estate. And
so what sort of condition was the Abbey in when you first knew it?
Well, extremely shabby. It had, with all the animals and, you know, the curtains were ripped at the bottom, the furniture was clawed, because I had, at one time, there were 10 cats there. You can imagine. And as I say, they were, all the domestic staff were part-time. It was really to get their meals rather than clean the place. It was cleaned, but it wasn't... It really was left to rack and ruin. If anything had to really be done, she didn't get the proper people in, like... Mr. Foyle now, he gets the people in to do the antique work, doesn't he? But she didn't. She'd just get a plasterer in, and, you know, it was a bad show, really. They'd lost interest. They were too old. She was 88 when she died. Mr. Batty died first, and then Mrs. Jakes, who was still working until she became too ill. She went into hospital, but she was still running the show in her 90s. She died at 94.
Lots of people come to the tea tent and say they used to work for
that's the right, exactly. The staff, people used to say, they'd see the advert in the papers, oh, don't go work for Christina Foyle, she sacks you as soon as look at you. But it wasn't Miss Foyle was doing the sacking, it would be Mrs. Jakes would say, no, she's not good enough.
And you mentioned your office in the Chapter House. Can you tell us what that looks like for people who haven't been there?
Yes, well, it looks beautiful now. I sat next to the handle organ with a rickety old desk and a typewriter that was sort of so old. It was like in my early days as a typist that it wasn't electric or anything. It was a real old typewriter. And in front of the organ was a frame with 5 tortoises that lived in there. She wouldn't let them hibernate. They came in the winter, went out in the summer. But they were in there all winter. Then sometimes you'd go in, there'd be a big cage in the corner in the winter. Oh, the baby hedgehogs that have been rescued, they were in there too.
So she obviously loved animals.
Oh, well, she always said she loved animals more than people. They were genuine. Animals were genuine.
Marvellous surroundings to work in.
Fantastic.
Were you warm enough?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, it was always warm. And they had that big fire going, you know, in the winter. I started on New Year's Eve, and it was snowy, but I got there because I was worried about the lane, you know. But I got there, and it was a great big fire and warm in the chapel. So, no, I was never cold. Yeah.
I know you didn't meet William Foyle, but can you tell us a few of the stories about him?
Well, I can, because Miss Foyle used to love telling them. And one of her favourite ones was when they first started clearing the pond, when after he'd bought the abbey, they found thousands of bones in the bottom of this pond. They didn't know whether they were animal bones or human bones or what. But he had them all sacked up. And in those days, they used to open the abbey to the public. And while people were going round the grounds, he would go to their cars, and if the boot opened, he would put a sack of bones in their car. So can you imagine when they got home, what's this? But that's how he got rid of them. It is unbelievable, but through those stories about him, you realise why Miss Foyle was as she was, because she had her father's sense of humour. Yes, but he just, the stories that she told about him, she was obviously his favourite. He used to take her to the auctions. He was very interested in silver, and he used to take her to the auction houses and get her as a very little girl to bid for it. Yeah. All those things. And he sent her to Russia when she was 22 years of age to chase bad debts. And that was in 1933. And she met Malcolm Muggeridge on that trip, and they were friends for the rest of their lives. And when she got to Russia, the reason the debts hadn't been paid was because they'd all been sent to Siberia. It wasn't allowed that you buy books from abroad. Yeah. So, but imagine 22 to go to Russia on your own. So, you know, she was brought up the hard way, thrown in with the deep end.
And what was life like domestically with Grandpa Foyle?
Fun. He used to keep newspapers in pristine condition. And when they had guests stay, he would put a newspaper by each plate at breakfast table. And it would be the Times or the Telegraph, and they'd open up and start to read. Good Lord, you know. And then they'd look at the date, and perhaps they were 18 months old. It was just eccentric from, the whole family.
Did he have a train set in the attic?
That's right, he did. Mm. I didn't ever see that because when he died, the vicar from Malden, I'm not sure which church, but a vicar, used to come and play trains with Willie Foyle up in his attic. And when Mr. Foyle died, Christina gave the train set to the vicar. So I never saw that. But that was the story that she told, that she gave it to him. Mm. She wasn't interested in trains.
Mm. And the house has changed a lot now.
Now, when she died in 1999 and Christopher Foy took over, and I think I said that, didn't I? Yes. Then in the, yeah. Then we get on to the excavations, yep.
Right, okay.
In the early 2000s, excavations took place at Bealey Abbey, and Bealey Abbey has become a very important medieval site. The gardens have been transformed since Christopher took over, and the open days throughout the summer have become very popular, and I'm still involved with the Abbey through them. The, you know, well, you know from being there yourself that... Did you see the gardens before?
No.
They were absolutely weed-strewn, you know. We had a gardener, and he sort of became the estate manager. And Miss Foy, in old age, she got to where she wanted you there all the time. And he would come in, and he wouldn't get out again. So the gardens were neglected terribly. And with me, I used to take the dictation, go into the chapel, and I'd hear her, Mrs. Rouse. And I would say, oh, I didn't hear you. Because otherwise the letters didn't get typed. She wanted company all the time. When after Mrs. Jakes died, really, it was it became very difficult. And she wouldn't go out either. And I used to say to her, come, the garden's looking nice, the roses around. Come, I'll take you for a walk. No. And I should say, if you don't use them, you'll lose them. And she did. Mm. She couldn't walk any distance at all at the end. Mm. So it was a shame, really, because she had that beautiful place. And she never saw it. Mm-hmm. Just never saw it. Mm. So then I suppose when it really got shabby, it was just as well she couldn't see the weeds and everything. Mm. But we used to sort of tell her, oh, the bluebells are out, or the roses are looking nice, and the kingfish is back. And that's how she lived, really, just by what the staff told her.
Mm. How many staff were there at the end then?
Well, I've no idea, because that was another thing. She had people in on different days, so you never really saw each other. I knew Andrea, because she used to come in the evening while I was there to do her tea. So I did know her, and there was one or two others that I knew who came in while I was there, if I was working a bit late or something, you know. But you didn't know how many were actually there. I think they were in and out all day. It was a funny sort of life, really. It wasn't like a job, not really, you know. You just went down there and had fun. Yeah.
And her husband, what role did he play in all of this?
Well, he was a great support to her. They were married over 50 years. And he was a very quiet man. He did as he was told, up to a point. And I used to work for both of them. I'd do letters for her, and then I'd do his letters. And that was a funny situation, really. But he had a very nice singing voice. And he was doing a sort of a record of songs and things that he got recordings of. And if I said, oh, I don't know that one, he'd sit and sing it to me. He had a lovely voice. And, oh, well, that was nice, you know. Shall we get on? But I liked him a lot. I did. I was very sad. He had a very bad stroke. And didn't survive it. But, yes, he was a stalwart, shall we say, because he left quite a lot of money. And she said to me, did you see Mr. Batty's will in the paper? I said, I did. She said, I had no idea, you know. But it was hers anyway. It went to her, but I had no idea he had that sort of money. They were funny. They were funny. Yeah. Mrs. Jakes had a... I went there one day and Mrs. Jakes said, we had a row. I said, oh. She said, I've told her what for. I said, oh, right. I went in and she didn't say anything. Just got your book, yes. Then Mrs. Jakes walked into the calefactory, nose in the air. She said, oh, Mrs. Jakes, please don't be cross. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She just couldn't bear it. Mm-hmm. Her best friend. Mm.
And your work was mainly dictation and letters?
Yeah. Yeah.
What else did you do?
Well, I had several jobs, really. As I say, I started off... Somebody at the shop had left lots and lots of letters unanswered. And my first job was to get these letters answered and quoting for books. And she said to me after a few weeks, we're getting lovely letters back from yours. I said, oh, good. So that was that. And then they put all the records, the Whittaker's reference books, were put on microfiche, which is on the computer. So I went up to the shop. They trained me to do that. And then... she said, I don't want you to do that job. I want you to learn how to do it and then you can train the people I get in, which I did. So I was doing that for a little while. I did an accounts job for a little while, which I hated. I'm no good at figures. And I said to her, I'm not happy doing this particular job. She said, no, okay. So we'll drop that one and carry on with the quotes and all that. Well, then her secretary left. And she said to me, she didn't tell me she'd left, this was her way. She said, Mr. Batty's got a very important letter he wants done to South Africa. If he stands behind you and dictates it, would you type it? I said, well, no. I said, I've got my book here, I'd rather do it in shorthand. And type it up. Well, this letter was 3 pages long. So I did it, took it in, and I said, if there's anything wrong, I said, just give it back, I'll do it again. He said, okay. That was it. Went home. Went back the next time, and she said, have you got your shorthand book? I said, yes. She said, will you do some letters for me? And that was how I became her secretary. She didn't tell me she needed a secretary. She tried me out first. Mm. And that was okay. So And that's how it evolved, you know. Mm. Then the lady who used to keep the records for the luncheons left, and all the photos and everything were piling up, and I said to Mr. Batty, it'd be a shame to lose these records. I said, they go back to 1930. I said, would you like me to do it? Oh, he said, would you? I said, yes. He said, well, you won't have time. I said, I'll take it home and do it. Oh, okay then. So I got that job, keeping the records. And that I carried on with Mr. Foyle as well, because we were still having the luncheons after she died. And so I carried on with that. What else? The press cuttings. The press cuttings lady left, so I managed to land that one as well. And I was still doing that. And I've only last June 2017, that's it, June the 1st, 2017. We stopped because everything's coming through online, and all you've got to do is type it in. You can see it online, no pictures or real articles. Mm. So they've stopped doing the press cuttings now. Mm. But that's it was never given a title. Mm. You were just asked to do this or that. Mm. Or the other. Mm. and you either did it or you said no thanks. Yeah.
Mm. You're good.
Yeah.
You're good. I'll pause it there.